Okay, so very good to be here with you. Yeah, you have quite a lovely center. It's the first time I've been here, and it's really quite beautiful, very spacious. Yeah. So we're going to spend several days together, particularly over the weekend. We'll be on vacation with the Buddha, and tonight and tomorrow night we're preparing for our vacation. So tonight, our topic is practical applications of the Dharma in daily life, something along that line. So we'll talk about that. I always like, first, before giving the talk, to sit quietly with people, do a little bit of breathing meditation to calm the mind and change our energy from running around all day to doing something a little bit more serious. Okay, so sit up straight. If you're in a chair, put your feet flat on the floor. And then your hands right on the left, thumbs are touching. Lower your eyes. And then just scan your body for a moment and see if there's tightness anywhere. If your stomach is tight, or maybe your back and shoulders are tight, or your jaw is tight. Anyway, if you find any tightness, just try and release it. And then bring your attention to the breath, letting your breathing process be very natural. Don't force it. And put your attention either at the upper lip and the nostrils, being aware of the sensation of the air as it passes there. Or put your attention at the abdomen, being aware of the rise and fall of your belly as you inhale and exhale. So put your attention at one of the two places. Don't go back and forth between them. And simply observe your breath from that point. If you get distracted by a sound or physical sensation or a thought, just notice that, but bring your attention home to the breath. So be interested in your breath. Observe what's happening during each in-breath and each out-breath. And by keeping your mind on one object, in this case the breath, and the mind settles down. So let's do that for a few minutes. Thank you. cultivate our motivation and think that we will listen and share together this evening so we can develop a kind heart, so we can leave aside the judgmental, critical mind and replace it with a mind of loving kindness and compassion. And let's do this not solely for our own welfare, but really feeling how interconnected we are with all other living beings. Let's work on developing our kind heart for the benefit of all beings. And to really be of the greatest benefit, we need to develop wisdom and to completely purify our mind. In other words, to become a fully awakened Buddha. So let's have that as our highest aspiration for sharing the evening together and see what we're about to do this evening as a way of progressing towards our ultimate goal. So take a moment and really generate that motivation. So, Dharma in daily life. This is, our where we practice most of the time, isn't it? We practice sometime on the cushion, but most of the time it's in our daily life activities. And so, to know how to put our daily life activities into the Dharma, or put the Dharma into our daily life activities, you know, somehow merge them in one way or another. And it's quite challenging, because it really means understanding the Dharma well and being very mindful of the Dharma so that we can hold it in our mind during the day. So mindfulness, according to Buddhism, I'm not talking about the mindfulness craze in psychology now, but mindfulness in Buddhism is being, aware of our precepts, aware of our values, aware of the qualities that we want to cultivate in our daily life, holding those in our mind. And then using another mental factor called, sometimes it's called vigilance or introspective awareness, to check up to see if we are acting according to our precepts and our values and keeping the Dharma in mind. Okay, so mindfulness remembers what we want to practice, and introspective awareness checks up and sees if we're doing it. Okay? So, a very good way to practice is in the thought training teachings, in the 7-point thought training. Have some of you had instructions on that? 7-point thought training? No one? She's nodding yes. Did she teach you and you don't remember? So one of the points in the 7-point thought training is called the five forces. And so you have the five forces during your life and the five forces at the time of death. So the five forces during our life give a very nice prescription of how to practice the Dharma during our life. Okay? So the first one is, of the five forces, is the force of our motivation. So what I think is very effective is first thing in the morning when you wake up, yeah, to generate your motivation. Yeah. In other words, don't have your thought be, oh no, the alarm clock's ringing now. And don't make your first thought, where's my coffee? Yeah. But instead, try and generate your motivation for being alive as your first thought. So I like to describe that motivation as having three parts. Three most important things. Not one most important, three most important. So first most important thing is to think when we wake up, today I'm not going to harm anybody. Yeah, I don't want to harm anybody physically. I don't want to harm anybody through my speech by criticizing them or creating disharmony or lying to them or whatever. And I don't want I don't want to harm them through my mind by contemplating how to get my revenge for when they've hurt my feelings, or just having my run-of-the-mill, judgmental, critical mind that likes to make negative comments about everyone. Okay, so already that's a tall order, isn't it? Yeah, but before we can even begin practicing it, we have to generate that motivation. Without the motivation, there's no way we'll even practice it. Okay, so first thought, don't want to harm others and things like that. The second most important thing is today I want to be of benefit and service to others. Okay, so not only abandon harming, but also do what I can to help them. Yeah. So helping others doesn't have to be some big spectacular thing. Yeah, lots of times we look at the people who are very, very famous in the world for the help they give to others. We look at the Dalai Lama, we look at Mother Teresa, we look at Nelson Mandela, and we say, I can't be like them. Yeah, so how in the world can I help anybody? But in actual fact, you know, His Holiness, Mother Teresa, and Nelson Mandela are not in our families. Yeah, they are somewhere else. So who is it that's going to benefit our families? Who is it that's going to be of benefit and service at our workplaces? Who is it that's going to be a benefit walking down the streets of Copenhagen? You know, it's not going to be the Dalai Lama. Yeah, it's got to be us. Okay, it's got to be us. So then we have to stop and think, well, how can I be of benefit doing all my ordinary daily activities? How can I be of benefit to sentient beings? Yeah. And here's where the kind heart comes in. Okay. So how can we be of benefit? Well, first of all, you know, our motivation. So to think before you go to work, why am I going to work? Let me ask you this, why do you go to work? Okay, be truthful. Yeah, you don't try and pull the wool over my eyes. Yeah, why do you go to work? Oh, you're all so humble. Yeah.
To make a living.
Hmm? To make a living.
To benefit others.
Yeah? Some people go to work to benefit others. Most people go to work to make a living. Yeah? Wouldn't it be nice if, in addition to making a living, you had in your motivation to benefit others? Is there anything stopping you, except a poor memory, from having that motivation for going to work? Yeah? So who are you going to benefit when you go to work? Well, first of all, you know, if you work in some kind of manufacturing, you benefit the people who are going to use whatever it is you're producing. If you work in some kind of service job, then you're benefiting the people you deal with every day. Okay? You might be a bank teller, then you benefit the people in the bank. Yeah? You might be checkout people at the supermarket, you know, write the tab, then you benefit those people. Okay? So whatever customers you have, clients you have, to have the motivation to be of benefit to them. Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Do you ever think of that when you go to work? Yeah. I do a lot of prison work, and once in a while you find a prison that will have a factory inside of it and let the inmates work in the factory. And so one of the inmates I work with was talking to me about that, because he sews t-shirts. And so he was saying, how do I practice the Dharma when I'm sewing the t-shirts? And I said, you think of all the people who are going to wear the t-shirts and think, may they be well and happy. May they be free of illness and anger. Yeah? So you don't know the people who are going to wear the t-shirts, but you can still put your kind heart into them when you're operating the sewing machine. Okay? If you have a job where you're working the phones all day, then you really get to benefit people. Yeah, it's a hard job working the phones. Because people usually call because they want something, or because they're unhappy. I had a friend who worked in the customer service, i.e. complaint department, of Amazon. He's no longer at that job. I wonder why. But that was a hard job. But if, you know, you do that kind of job, and every time the phone rings, you think, you know, may I be a benefit to whoever is calling? Yeah? Instead of, you know, I have to say, no, the company can't do this and know that. You know, that you really take the side of the customer and say, yeah, I get what you're saying. And then you try and do your best to fulfill whatever their need is, if you can do that. Yeah? So, benefiting customers, clients, yeah? Also, when you go to work, benefiting your colleagues. Yeah? Now, how do you benefit your colleagues? Well, one simple way is clean up around the coffee machine at work. Yeah, don't leave your mess for somebody else to clean up. Yeah, but clean up yourself. Yeah. And even if somebody else left a mess, clean up what they left with a happy mind. Okay. Be a real team player. Yeah. Instead of working with others and kind of doing as little as possible, really be a team player and share the work with the people we're doing it with. And don't just come in at the end in a rush of energy to claim all the reward for doing the project. Yeah, you know how some people do that? Yeah, I know none of you do that. Yeah, but there are some really obnoxious people who do that. They don't do their part, and then at the end, they say, my project was da-da-da-da-da, and these people helped me. Don't you love those people? But, you know, don't be one of them. Yeah, be a real team player when you go to work. How about helping your family, being of service to your family? Sometimes people come to me, especially young people, after they've done a retreat and they feel really excited about the Dharma and they say, how can I share the Dharma with my family and let them know how wonderful it is? And I say, take out the garbage. Yeah. And they look at me. And then I explain that, you know, can you imagine? Yeah, you go home, you know, to mom and dad or to your husband and wife or whoever it is, and without anybody asking you, you take out the garbage and you do the dishes. Imagine that. And you clean up your room without anybody asking. So can you imagine what your parents are going to think? You've just gone away to a Buddhist retreat. You come home, yeah? You take out the garbage, do the dishes, clean up your room. Your mom goes, wow. Yeah, 30 years. I've been trying to get him to do this. Yeah. He went to one Buddhist retreat. I like Buddhism. Yeah. I think Buddhism is great. It got my son to do what I haven't been able to get him to do for 30 years. Yeah. That's the best way to convince your family of the value of the Dharma. Yeah, let them see your changed behavior. Mm-hmm. Let them see that, and they will support you in your Dharma practice. Okay. Also, another way to be of service in your family, something His Holiness can't do, but you know, in the morning, look at your family members. Look at them in the eye, especially if you have kids. How many of you have kids? A lot of you have kids, yeah. Look at your kids, yeah? And ask them, you know, what are you going to do today at school? Or what are you doing at work? Yeah? At the end of the day, at dinner time, how was your day? I know one family, and every evening at dinner, they go around and they share something they learned that day. Yeah? So, you know, their kid, little, they have two little kids and one teenager, and then the parents too, and they share something that they learned that day. You know, what an amazing way to bring a family together. Because nowadays, you know, I'm assuming it's like in my country, yeah, that the morning scene with your children is, get up, you're late, get up, come on, get up, Yeah. Go brush your teeth. Yeah. Did you do your homework? No, the dog didn't eat it last night. Did you do your homework? Yeah. Yeah. Eat your breakfast. Now, eat your whole breakfast. We're not having chocolate for breakfast. Eat your breakfast. Yeah. Okay, now, do you have your school books? Yeah, are you ready to go? You're late for class. Get out of the house and go to class. Another, yeah, does this sound familiar? Anybody's family sound like that? Oh, again, you all look so sweet. Yeah, maybe this is just American families. You know? Really? Just American families? Yeah? Okay, well, anyway, in my country, the parents sound like drill sergeants for the army. Yeah? Just bossing the kids around. You know? Never looking the kids in the eye and saying, how was your day? And how do you feel? Yeah, and who are your friends, and what do you talk to your friends about? Yeah, what grade did you get on your test? How come you're not the best one in the class? How come you're not the best athlete? Yeah, you're in primary one. Yeah, you know, first grade. You're in first grade, and you failed your spelling test. You're not going to get into a good university in this world. Yeah? I mean, so many parents, this is the way they talk to their kids. Yeah? Is that a helpful way to talk to your kids? I don't think so. Yeah? I've talked to so many parents who told me that before they had kids, they made a very strong determination never to talk to their kids in the way their parents talk to them. Yeah? And then, after they have kids, what do they find coming out of their mouth? The same things their parents said to them. And they're going, what happened? You know, what am I doing to my kids by talking this way? Any of you have this problem? Oh, I know you don't. Because I know this group already. You know, none of you are drill sergeants. You know, you're all very kind. But how about this? Do you know any other people? Okay. Yeah. So... Now, it's something to really think about. And you know, when you come home from work, yeah, instead of just, you know, again, I'll talk about American families. Yeah. People just, you know, they get off the subway or out of the car, you know, you get off your bicycles, whatever it is, you know, you walk in the front door, you throw down your briefcase, you collapse on the sofa. Turn on the television, yeah, or turn on the computer and surf the computer for some entertainment. Yeah, put your feet up. And this I know, in Denmark, you drink a beer. Because I've walked around the streets and I see 3 o'clock in the afternoon people are drinking beers, and it's not even after work. Don't worry, in Russia they drink vodka first thing in the morning. In my last trip to Russia, I was... I'm going off on a detour, but just so you don't feel so bad. I was teaching, I was in Ukraine, and I was teaching in Donetsk, and I got sick, and then we were traveling back to Kiev. I was going back to the States, and, you know, in a compartment, you know, where you sleep, and then you wake up the next morning. So there were these two Ukrainian men in the compartment with us, and woke up, and you know, I'm kind of coughing and sneezing, and they start the morning off empty stomach with vodka. And they say, oh, here, have some vodka, you'll feel better. And I said, no, thank you. It's very kind of you to offer, but no, thank you. No, really, have some vodka. You know, well, I'm a nun, I don't drink vodka. You're a what? Have some vodka. It was an amazing train trip. I managed not to have any vodka. Anyway, yeah, you know, when you come home from work, yeah, don't just think, oh, I'm so exhausted, and my spouse or my roommate or my kids or my parents, whoever it is you live with, is supposed to cook dinner and take care of me. Instead, before you open the door to your home, stop and think, I'm going to see the people who I care about the most in my life. And so I want to be kind to them, and I want to have a good relationship with them. And so think about that before you open your door. And then, when you have that motivation, open your door and go home and see your family. Motivation is very important, you know, and especially I think, you know, so often we overlook the importance of creating a good motivation with respect to our family. Yeah. We consider our family so much a part of us that we feel like we don't need to use ordinary human manners with our family. Yeah. They know us so well, we know them so well, so we just dispense with manners. And so if we're in a bad mood, we're in a bad mood. We let it out all over the family. We spill our bad mood out, you know, like the tide rushing in, to the people that we care the most about. That's rather stupid, isn't it? Isn't it rather self-defeating? Yeah. And let me ask you a question. Would you ever speak to a stranger the way you speak to the family members that you care about? Don't think so. You know, even if a stranger, you know, does something horrible, we still keep some kind of manners with them. With our family, you know, we're a little bit angry. You know, you married me, I have a bad temper, you're stuck with it. Yeah? Yeah, I have every right. Yeah, once you say I do, I have every right to dump my anger all over you, and you just have to endure it because we love each other. Yeah. Well, you know, you don't love each other for very long with that kind of behavior. Yeah. But I think it's quite important, you know. Use good manners with your family. Yeah, say please and thank you. Help them when they need help. Yeah. And when you're in a bad mood, don't think it's your right to just spill it out all over your spouse and your kids and your in-laws and your parents and your siblings and whoever else, even your dog, you know? Okay, if we have a problem with anger, I think that's what we're talking about tomorrow night, so you've got to come back tomorrow. And also bring your husband and wife and kids and parents, because I'm sure, you know, that you don't have the problem with anger, but they do, you know? So bring them along, and then you'll probably go home and tell them what I said tonight. You know, oh, this is a very good, interesting talk. She said, you should not dump your anger over me. you know, to backtrack. You know, we're still on that first point of our motivation. Yeah. So generating a good motivation with respect to our colleagues, our family, the people we meet in society, yeah, the people we share this planet with, to generate an attitude of kindness. Now somebody's going to say, you want me to generate an attitude of kindness for ISIS? I don't know how you say ISIS. Do you say ISIS? Yeah, the Germans say something else. Yeah. So you want me to generate an attitude of kindness for ISIS? You know? For Jihadi John, remember? Remember Jihadi John? The one who used to slice off everybody's heads? You want me to have an attitude of kindness for him? Yes. Okay. That doesn't mean I think that ISIS and Jihadi John should be able to just continue with their escapades. No. Okay. But if we look, why are they behaving the way they're behaving? It's because they're unhappy. We may not understand why they're unhappy. We don't live in their culture. My guess is they're unhappy because they don't feel respected by the West and because they don't have the same level of wealth and technology and so on that we have. That's part of my guess. I think they also may be unhappy because of sometimes the way we live our life in the West. You know, we have a very hedonistic lifestyle. Yeah, that may be quite offensive to them. In any case, they're unhappy. So having a kind attitude towards them wishes them happiness. Yeah. It doesn't wish that they get everything they want. When we have a kind attitude towards ISIS, we're not saying we hope you win every battle. No. You know. But may you be free of whatever pain and suffering you have that is making you think that by killing other people you will be happy. May you be free of that suffering. May you find something in your life that doesn't involve harming others, that you feel a very strong interest and passion for doing. May you find something that gives meaning to your life. Yeah. Instead of being a member of ISIS. Yeah. So, you know, wishing them well in the sense of, you know, wanting them to be free of the suffering that is causing them to do such harmful actions. Okay? Yeah, so, you know, that second part of our motivation, you know, first part was not to harm, second was to be of benefit, yeah? So to try and be of benefit. And also just in small ways along, you know, the day. Yeah. Be polite on the road. Yeah. Do you have drivers that suffer from road rage? Yeah. Like I know none of you do. Yeah. I mean, in my country, oh boy, some people have road rage. And somebody cuts them off, and they are, you know, they're furious, and they want to get even, and they speed ahead and cut the other guy off. And, you know, it's a big cause of accidents. So, and somebody cuts you off on the highway, just accept it, you know. Maybe they have to go see somebody who's sick. I was in a car. One time I was helping a friend. She was doing home birth, having her baby at home. And she wasn't dilating properly, so we had to take her to the hospital. So we got her in the car. She's already in labor. And the driver is driving quickly to get her to the hospital. Yeah. And I'm sure that he cut some people off. Yeah. Now, if somebody cuts you off, but you knew that they had a pregnant woman in their car who was going to have a baby but wasn't dilating properly and needed help, would you care if that person cut you off on the highway? No. Okay. So, we don't know why somebody cuts us off. Yeah. So, let them go. Somebody wants to merge in traffic, you know? Let them do that. Be polite on the road. Yeah. Don't run over the bicycle drivers. And bicycle drivers don't run over the people who are walking. Yeah? I mean, it's an incredible way, really, to be of benefit and service to the people that we see around us. Yeah? If you see somebody else's bike has fallen over, ride it. You know, set it upright. Or, you know, whatever kind of things you have to do. Smile at the strangers that you meet in the grocery store. Yeah. We've ridden on a couple of trains here in Denmark. I don't know what it is, but people don't look so happy on the trains. Yeah? Of the first train ride, I was like, hmm? And I checked with Kaz, and she had the same impression of the people sitting, you know, opposite. And then today too, you know. So be, you know, look at people, smile at them, yeah. Connect with people. It's a nice thing to do. Yeah. Okay, so that was the second of the three most important. Yeah. Then the third most important part of our motivation is to have a strong determination to hold the bodhicitta mind. Okay? So the bodhicitta mind is the aspiration, the altruistic intention to become a fully awakened Buddha so that we can be of optimum benefit to all sentient beings, all living beings. So holding that bodhicitta mind, developing it each day is something that's really important and really critical. So first thing in the morning, before we even get out of bed, before you brush your teeth, yeah, I'm not going to harm anybody. I'm going to be a benefit as much as I can in whatever small or big ways. And I'm going to remember bodhicitta and hold that aspiration to become fully awakened for the benefit of others. Yeah. And that's the meaning of my life. And so whatever I do today, I want it to go for those three purposes so that I can live a meaningful life. Yeah. So you generate that motivation in the morning, and then during the day, you remember it. So it's very helpful to use some kind of action or signal or something that happens frequently during the day to remember your motivation. Okay. So for some people, it's every time they receive a text or a phone call before reading it or answering it, they come back to their motivation. For some people, I talked to one woman, it's every time her child goes, Mommy! Yeah? That's her reminder to come back to her motivation. okay? Or every time you're at a red light in traffic, remember your motivation, okay? So whatever it is, try and keep that motivation alive in your heart and in your mind during the day. And then in the evening, yeah, before you get too tired, yeah, then just sit and reflect on the day and see how you did. Were there things, you know, in what ways did you act according to your motivation? And in what ways did you kind of mess up? So when you acted according to your motivation, pat yourself on the back. It's very important to acknowledge what we do well and to rejoice in our own virtue. Yeah, it's important to do that. Yeah. So, and then there may be other situations where maybe you lost your temper at somebody. So, okay, I lost my temper. I need to apply the four opponent powers and do some purification. Yeah, you remember the four opponent powers? You didn't teach them four opponent powers. You taught them, but they didn't remember. Okay. First opponent power?
Regretting?
Yeah, regret. Okay, so we regret whatever action we did. Second one, we restore the relationship by taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. Third one, we make a determination not to do the action again. And fourth one, we do some kind of remedial behavior. Maybe reciting mantras, bowing to the Buddha, some kind of meditation, something like that. Okay? So in the evening, we check up and we see how we did. And especially, like if we're still annoyed because of something that happened during the day, then to process it, apply a Dharma antidote so that you can let go of any kind of uncomfortable emotion that is in your mind at the end of the day. And that way, when you go to sleep, you can go to sleep very peacefully. There's nothing weighing on you. And when you wake up in the morning, you wake up fresh. Yeah, without your first thought being, oh, I'm in the middle of a fight with so-and-so. You know, because you've resolved it in your own mind the night before. Okay? So motivation. Then the second of the five forces is called the white seed. And what this means is to purify and to accumulate merit. In other words, to ready our mind for our spiritual practice. Okay? So it's very good to do some purification and accumulation of merit every day. I don't know about you, but I have a lot of things to purify. Okay? Yeah, you remember the list of the 10 paths of non-virtue? Yeah? Killing, stealing, unwise and unkind sexual behavior, you know those 10? Yeah, so I don't know about you, I've done all 10. I was not born as a nun. Yeah, I was a 70s kid. So, you know, did all 10 of them. So, lots to purify. Not to mention previous lives. Who knows what in the world I did in previous lives. Okay? And so purification practices are very important for letting go of things. Yeah, for coming to terms with things. If we don't do purification practice, then what happens is we grow old and all of the things that we've done that we regret, they just pile up on us more and more and more. You know? So I think we've all met very bitter old people, angry, bitter old people. I don't know about you, but I don't want to become one of them. So if I don't want to become one of them, then I need to keep on top of what's happening in my life. In other words, yeah, I need to own my mistakes and purify them through these four powers that I just mentioned. Yeah. I need to make amends to people that I have harmed. I need to forgive the people who have harmed me. And I need to do this soon. Yeah, not put it off, because we don't know when we're going to die. And we don't want to die with all this kind of stuff on our head. So I have plenty of stories about that kind of thing, yeah? I talked to one old woman came to see me once. She was in her 70s, and she came to talk to me. And her husband, she found out that like 20 years ago or whatever it was, her husband had an extramarital affair. And the way she found out was that he contracted some kind of disease and then gave it to her. Needless to say, she was not very happy about that. Yeah, about the affair or about the disease. But when she came to talk to me, she said, you know, I've forgiven him, because he's old now and I'm old now, and I don't want him to die with my anger on his head, and I don't want to die myself with my anger in my heart. So I've forgiven him. I thought that was wonderful. I mean, she just did it voluntarily on her own, through seeing the disadvantages of holding a grudge and the benefits of forgiveness. I also know some other people who in their family, the brothers and sisters clashed over who knows what. Yeah, actually this happened in my family, not with my generation, with my parents' generation. And, you know, different people weren't speaking to different people. And so when one of the brothers was dying, their kids called the siblings of their parents, in other words, their aunt and uncle, and said, you know, you haven't spoken to my dad in how many years? If you want to speak to him now, he's dying, please call. Yeah? And some of them said, no, we don't want to talk to him. Dying or not dying. I have a great family. Yeah. No, I do have a lovely family, but this kind of thing is just beyond my comprehension. You know, why that would happen. Yeah? Even when somebody's dying, not to make amends. But who wants to die like that with all that stuff on your head? You know, I mean, it's awful. One of the inmates that I work with, he was imprisoned for a crime that he told me that he didn't do, and I believe him. He has no reason to lie to me. But the rest of his family believes that he committed this crime. And his mother in particular was really upset about it and refused to speak to him. Yeah, so he was in prison for many years. Mother would not call him, would not come to visit. He would try and contact her, and she just would cut everything off. And one day, The chaplain came to see him and said, "Your mother called." And sure enough, his mother was dying and at that point wanted to reconcile with her son. He had wanted to reconcile for the last, I don't know how many decades, you know. So they reconciled and they had a few good phone calls before she died. So it was peaceful when she died between them. But at the same, and I rejoice at that, but at the same time, it made me so sad that the mother waited until 3 weeks before she died, she was dead, to reconcile with her son. If she had reconciled years earlier, she could have enjoyed a very good relationship with him for many years. But she held on to a grudge for that long. Okay? So we don't know when we're going to die. And, you know, it's not very wise to kind of hold out till the very end to forgive someone or to apologize to someone. It's better to do it now. Some people may not want to speak to us. They may not be ready to speak to us. We can write them a letter. We can send them a card. But regardless of what state they're in, our job is to forgive and apologize and have a clear mind ourselves, regardless of whether they forgive, regardless of whether they apologize. Yeah, they're state, their behavior, their state of mind is their business. We can't control it. But we have to make our own mind peaceful. Okay? So purification practice helps us to do this. Yeah? And especially if we do purification every day, then we resolve any kind of leftover stuff at the end of the day and we don't carry it around with us. So that's very good. Then accumulation of merit, that means doing good deeds, okay? Being generous. Yeah. There's always an opportunity in our daily life to be generous, isn't there? Yeah. Sometimes we're generous with our time. Sometimes we're generous in doing a favor for somebody. Sometimes we're generous with material goods, but there's always an opportunity to give something. And sometimes we give a smile, and a smile is an amazing gift to somebody who really needs a smile. Okay? So to accumulate merit, yeah? Do good deeds in our life, yeah? And in our Dharma practice, make offerings. It's very nice, a very easy and nice way to accumulate merit, and also a nice way to start out the day is to make offerings on your altar. Yeah. So if you have an altar in your home, doesn't have to be a big one. Yeah. But some representation of the Buddha, I think that's very helpful because every time you walk past your altar, you see the Buddha sitting there so peacefully. Yeah. And sometimes we walk past our altar and we're not so peaceful. But we see the Buddha sitting there peacefully, and it reminds us that we can be that way. Yeah. So we have an altar, yeah, maybe a picture, statue, you know, maybe a photo of our teacher, and then to make offerings. In the Tibetan tradition, we have this thing of offering 7 water bowls. Okay, we also have a tradition of offering light, so I see light, and we offer flowers. Yeah, beautiful flowers. We offer food. Yeah, But anything that you consider beautiful, you know, water, food, incense, flowers, yeah, light. And it's very nice to make that as an offering at the very beginning of the day and think of the Buddha's qualities and think, you know, really like reflect on the Buddha's kindness and the Buddha's wisdom and making offerings with the wish to become like the Buddha yourself. Yeah. And I find it very, very helpful. You know, even when I'm traveling, I have this little makeshift altar, you know. It's kind of, it's been through a lot over many years. Yeah. But I just set it up wherever I am, and then there's usually food somewhere. And then every day to make a food offering, you know. When I'm at home, I do the water bowls and the lights and other things. It doesn't take very long, but really it takes like 5 minutes at the most. But it's a very good habit to get into, you know, to make offerings and remember the Buddha's qualities in that way. Okay, so that's purification and creation of merit. Yeah. Lots of other ways, you know. Some of you may do a daily practice. You may do the prostrations to the 35 Buddhas. Very good way to purify and create merit. Or do Vajrasattva practice. Or any of your meditations that you do are ways of purifying and creating merit. So I only got through 2 of the 5. This is normal for me. I hardly ever get through anything I set out to do in a Dharma talk. So we can continue tomorrow. Yeah, and then if you get mad at me for taking up so much time, then we'll go on to the topic of anger. But right now, I want to leave some time for questions and comments. So please feel free to ask whatever you like. Yes?
Good evening. It's really nice to see you, and you're very inspiring also. In women in Buddhism, I've seen some old movies with Sylvia Wetzel and you. You really paved the way for women in Buddhism. So that's really nice.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, do you think it's these numbers you say, the five forces, and I'm thinking it's really important to remember it, or else would you say it's good, it's vital to memorize this, because or else, you know, you forget during the day, you go to teaching, you hear this, yeah, that's good, sounds nice, but...
Yeah, I think it's very helpful when you're studying to remember the lists of different things. Yeah, it's very helpful because that way you can remember all of the points, and then when you do whatever you're doing, you're able to do it fully because you have all the points in your mind. As you practice something and you do it again and again, you know, then you become so used to it that you don't need to say 1, 2, 3, 4. You just kind of automatically do it. Okay? But I find it very helpful, you know, with these five forces, you know, with other things in our life, or other things in our Dharma practice, to be able to, you know, like remember the Four Noble Truths. Yeah, these kinds of things. Yeah, in the monasteries, they do a lot of memorization, not just of the lists of things, but they memorize whole entire texts, like that thick. Quite an achievement. Other questions or comments? Yes?
I have a question.
When you talked about when there has, for example, the with the mother and the son who had this disagreement when he was in prison.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a disagreement with somebody, how should you then solve it? Should you talk about it first and deal with the conflict, or would it be better to just think that this has nothing to do with you necessarily and forgive it straight away?
Mm. Okay, so how to deal with a conflict. I think that is, it depends on the conflict, on the situation. Some things are very, very small, and it's just much better to let them go. Yeah, because if we had to have a conversation about every time someone did something we didn't like, you know, then we're always, you know, you put your pen here instead of putting your pen there. Don't you know I want the pen put here? You know? So it's a lot of the little things we just have to let go, okay? If it's a real, if it's a misunderstanding where people are, you know, where you can see very clearly that they don't know where the other person is, you know, you don't know where they're coming from and they don't know where you're coming from, then it's especially important to talk about it, yeah? Very often, what I've really seen in working with people and in looking at my own mind is so many of our conflicts come because either we don't listen well or we project motivations onto people that they don't have, or we project meaning of actions onto certain actions that the people who did them did not give them that meaning, you know? So in those kind of situations, especially with people that you live with or work with, it's important to work these things out. So sometimes we have to do part of the working out on our own, on our meditation cushion, by applying one of the Dharma antidotes to let go of whatever affliction is occupying our mind at the time. Sometimes we have to do some of that. Sometimes we have to go and talk with the person directly. Often we have to do both things. Yeah, work with our own mind and get ourselves calmer, and realizing what we're projecting, what we're imputing, realizing our supersensitivities over some things. And also, we need to communicate with the other person. In terms of communicating with other people, Marshall Rosenberg developed this system called nonviolent communication. Some of you may have heard, anybody heard about it?
Yeah.
So it's very good, it's very effective. It coincides with the Dharma in many ways. In some ways it doesn't, but in most ways it does. And it's very, very helpful. We use it at our monastery. Yeah. Yeah, so I think usually you have to do a combination of working with your own mind and communicating with the other person. And really learning, when we communicate with somebody else, learning to listen to them from our heart, yeah? Instead of just saying, tell me how the situation appears to you, and they start talking and telling us, you know, how the situation looks to them. And immediately we interrupt and say, you're wrong, that's not why I did that action, you know? That's not listening. We have to really let them explain themselves. Yeah. And then, you know, what Rosenberg has us do in those situations is we talk about feelings and needs. So somebody may dump a whole lot of things. Maybe I had some interaction with somebody, and then, you know, they're really mad, and they may have misunderstood something I said, or maybe I said something and I was a bit rude, or maybe even once in a while I wanted to hurt somebody's feelings. I have to admit it. You know, then, and so somebody's upset and they say what they have to say, then to say, you know, you know, it sounds like you're feeling upset, so you try and identify their feeling. Yeah, it sounds like you're feeling upset, and maybe you need, and then you kind of guess what you think they need. You know, you need cooperation. Yeah, sounds like you're upset, and you need you need respect. We make some kind of guess about what might be the emotional need of the other person. And if we guess wrong, no problem, because they'll tell us, no, that's not it. And then they'll tell us what their real need is or what their real feeling is. And that's very effective for helping other people identify what they're feeling and what they're needing. And especially, you know, because so often conflict happens because people don't feel heard. They don't feel like other people have heard them, have understood them. So when we learn to listen and be able to, you know, state back somebody's feeling and their need, they often feel this surge of relief, like, oh, finally, somebody is getting what's going on with me. And often that alone, the conflict goes way down. Yeah. But look at your own experience sometimes. Yeah. When you get upset, are you upset because you feel the other person doesn't understand you and that they're not listening? Yeah. Sometimes when you're angry or upset or feeling lonely or whatever, do you want somebody to come in and solve your problem, or do you want them just to listen and empathize? Sometimes we want somebody to listen and empathize. Yeah. We don't need them to solve our problem. And sometimes it makes you so mad when you're trying to explain how you feel and somebody jumps in and tries to solve your problem for you. Have you ever had that kind of interaction with somebody? Yeah? You just want somebody to listen, somebody to empathize. They don't need to fix it for you. And so similarly, we don't always need to try and fix other people's problems. Very often, the best thing we can do is just be able to listen. And listen from here, you know? Without saying, and I have the perfect solution. You should do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they're going, ah! Okay. Yes. So is your hand up?
No. I was just scratching.
Oh, okay. Other questions or comments? Yeah.
What can you do in situations where you can't talk to the person, no matter what you say, they just want to cause you harm?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a situation in which somebody is really holding a lot of anger and belligerence towards us. Yeah, then give them space. What else can we do? You know, give them space. Be as kind as we can to them. And don't expect anything back. And just give them lots of space. And doing the taking and giving meditation can be very helpful when we imagine taking on their suffering and giving them our happiness, that can be very helpful in this situation. Yeah. And don't blame ourselves. You know, these kind of things happen. And hopefully, eventually, the person will come around. Somebody over here. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just similar, a bit similar, because I have this very concrete conflict with a person who's a professional abuser, can we call it that?
Professional abuse.
Abuser, psychopath, I don't know the clinical term, but anyway, we don't share the same point of view of the universe.
Yeah.
I don't think we even live in the same city or anything like that. And it doesn't matter, and it's been going on, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years, it's a really long time. And every conflict, every time I just go like, okay, I'm calm, you get the way, okay, you're right, I'm sorry, I back out, I apologize. It doesn't even matter if I'm being wrong or not, I just take the blame and, okay, let's calm down now and so on. It just keeps going on and on and on. And then finally, some years ago, I just said, no, maybe that was the wrong attitude. And then I tried, okay, let's try this one. Slam the door. Smack. Don't want to see you anymore. The person comes back after the year. Oh, we should, you know, like put down the grudges and be friends and so on. Yes, do. Let's do that. And then it starts all over again.
Congratulations. I am too.
But still,
yeah, none of us are Buddhas yet.
But in a way, it got so much under my skin, I haven't been practicing for a year because it was like, oh.
Now that's your problem.
Yeah.
Okay, that's your problem. The rest of the stuff with them, you can't control.
Yeah.
Just, you know, they're doing their trip.
But every time I sit down and it's like, okay, now I'm going to do my practice, this person who have introduced me to Dharma pops up in my head and goes like, and I was like, no, come on.
Okay, well, that's your mind. They're not popping up in your head.
I know, but
they're not popping up in your head. You're remembering them. They said something once. You say it to yourself many times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a bad habit.
Oh, dear, yes.
Yes. You need to change that habit.
Oh, dear. You have any advice for that?
Yes.
I've been trying a lot of different approaches, and none of them is really, you know, working.
Why are you so interested in thinking about that person? Yeah. Well, maybe let me suggest something. Lots of times, you know, we think about a bad relationship. We ruminate. You know ruminate? Where you go round and around and around thinking about it. He said this, and then he did that, and then I said this, and I thought it was going to go well, and then he said this again, and then this happened again, and our mind just stays stuck on the same thing. It's like running. They don't have broken records now. In my days, we had broken records. You know, the younger generation is missing out on a really good analogy. Yeah. When you've heard a broken record, then you know what your mind is like. You know, maybe it's like, what would be another analogy? You know, something, you know, on your, maybe, you know, Siri or Cortana says the same thing to you over and over again, you know, and you just want your cell phone to shut up. You know, anyway, what I'm getting at is, you know, we're just going round, 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 round circles, you know, about my problem. Okay. The word my has a very special significance here. Yeah. It's not somebody else's problem. Yeah. You're not thinking about the people in Aleppo who are getting bombed now. And there was a hospital, a Syrian hospital, that was bombed yesterday, you know, and the last pediatrician in the area killed. You know, we're not thinking about their problems, ruminating about their problems. Yeah, we're stuck on our problem. You know what I often do when we do retreats, you know, week long, 2 weeks long, whatever retreat. Because everybody inevitably is ruminating on a problem. Because our problems are so interesting. Actually, they're kind of boring after you've ruminated about them. Because it really is like a broken record. It's like playing the same video movie again, and you know the ending, you know, and your mind just goes to the same ending again and again and again, but you keep doing it, yeah? So you know what I do is I have people write their problem down on a sheet of paper. Everybody puts their problem in a bowl, and then everybody at the retreat has to pick out a problem that isn't theirs. And then whenever they start to ruminate about their part, their problem, they have to immediately switch their mind to think about the other person's problem. Yeah? I don't know if you've noticed, but other people's problems aren't nearly as interesting as you know, have you noticed that? It's like, you know, so-and-so is having a fight with their mother, and they said this, and mother said that, and they said this, like, oh, you know, please, you've told me 5 times about the fight with your mother, can we talk about something else? But I want to tell you about what's happening with my Dharma friend, again and again and again, you know? So what you do is you just, every time your mind starts to go there, you switch it to somebody else's problem. Yeah, and see how long you can ruminate on somebody else's problem.
I do that. I try that.
Yeah?
Thank you.
I can tell you my problems if you're lacking in any problems to ruminate about. I'm sure any of you want to volunteer in case you yeah? No, it works very well. Okay. Other? Anything else? Oh, yeah.
I don't have a question. I just want to let you know. For the past 6-7 years, I came across you, the Dhamma Talk on YouTube. And I'm absolutely thrilled to sit right in front of you. I have traveled today just to meet
I can't hear you.
I have traveled. I come from I live in another part of Denmark. But above all, I have invited my daughter and her girlfriend, two young people. And for me, you are just what I hear. You know, the way I listen to your Dhamma talks on YouTube. But now just in a live version, and I get inspired. So I hopefully you have inspired these two young ladies.
Okay. Where are they? I can't see. Oh, okay. You and you. Okay,
so
good.
It's wonderful.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, so that gives me an excuse to make an unpaid public announcement. I brought with cards from our monastery, and they have the monastery They have my website, you know, your address, and the monastery website address. And there's lots of Dharma materials on both. And then, as she said, also on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and then search Srivasti Abbey, then there's over, I looked yesterday or the day before, there's over 3,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised too. So, okay. Okay, then we'll have a closing little meditation. So, just for a couple of minutes, and think about something we talked about, and think about it in terms of your life and how it works, so that you can take it home and apply it. So maybe this thing about making offerings, or maybe about your motivation for going to work, or how to start the day with a good motivation, you know, something that you heard this evening. Think about it so that you can put it into practice. Let's rejoice at learning something new this evening and learning how to open our heart to others, how to generate good motivations. Let's rejoice at just having done something quite useful that also accumulated merit and purified. So rejoice at what you did as an individual, rejoice at what everybody here did this evening, and rejoice at all the goodness and kindness in the world. And then you can imagine all that positive energy as like a light at the center of your chest, and send out the good energy we created into the universe as light, and imagine that it touches all the living beings and pacifies their ignorance, anger, and clinging attachment. Brings them peace in their own mind and enriches their mind with love and compassion and wisdom. Okay, good. Thank you.